Matt Whitaker, former U.S. Acting Attorney General.
This is such a great conversation about America, our future, what's going to save our republic.
We have a great football player. Matt Whitaker is here. Matt.
They tried to bury me. They didn't realize I was a C.
It's a touchdown. Touchdown, Whitaker.
Former Acting U.S. Attorney General.
Under President Trump.
I'm going to be an unwavering supporter of law enforcement.
Welcome to Liberty and Justice with your host, Matt Whitaker.
Welcome to Liberty and Justice, presented by American Cornerstone Institute. I'm your host, Matt Whitaker. We're in season three, and I'm excited to have this next guest, Congressman Kelly Armstrong from the great state of North Dakota. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Back in Bismarck, so it's been a good couple days.
You know, it is always good to be back home, isn't it? I feel the same way about my home state of Iowa. I'm never there enough, but when I am, it's just like so, it makes me so happy.
I like the big whitetails in Iowa.
We do have some big bucks, you know, because mostly we regulate how you can shoot them. No rifles, and so makes you have to get pretty close to bag a big one. But let's, I think a lot of people saw your, discussion this week with Special Counsel Rob Hur on the House Judiciary Committee. You made some incredible points, including just the number of places that the current president of the United States had mishandled and stored highly classified information. So why don't you tell me a little bit about kind of how you thought that went and what you think ultimately came out of not only your discussion with him, but the entire hearing.
Yeah, you know, sometimes five-minute questioning is frustrating, and sometimes it's really frustrating. I think I could have asked Special Prosecutor Hur questions for about 25 minutes, but I think it's really important for the American people to know how differently this case is being treated than President Trump's case right now. And you're exactly right. They found documents in the Penn Biden Center. They found them in his garage. They found them in his basement. They found them in his main floor office. They found them in his third floor den. They found them at the University of Delaware, and they found them at the Biden Institute. And this is not just all of those places over the course of decades. There were documents there from when he was a U.S. senator. So the elements of the crime are pretty simple. Did you have classified documents? Yes. Did they relate to national security? Yes. Did you willfully retain them knowing you were violating the law? Yes. And we also have another one. And this is something that I think we need to get from the DOJ. Apparently, there's an audio of President Biden, in his own words, reading classified documents to his ghostwriter. Like, we know in this age, we're doing it right now in a podcast. I mean, it's one thing to see it on a transcript. It's another thing to see it in a hearing. But the ads, when you have it in their own words, it's going to be really difficult, I think, for this administration to say they didn't knowingly and willfully retain and disclose classified documents, which is the elements of the crime. So two people, I think, had a pretty bad day. One, I think President Biden had a bad day in the hearing. And two, I think the DOJ had another bad day, because it's clear they jumped through as many hoops as they could to not refer prosecution.
So along that line, when do you think we'll get sort of these audio recordings? Because remember, they dropped the transcript of Special Counsel Hur's interview with President Biden an hour before your hearing started. Nobody had a chance to actually read it, figure out what was said. Still, you know, it's different, to your point, when you hear something in their own words versus read it on a sheet of paper. Do you think you're going to actually be able to get all of the sort of those underlying investigative documents?
Well, I think I think time is our enemy, right? I mean, they're going to continue. I mean, the DOJ hasn't been overly cooperative on a lot of these different issues, but I don't know what their defense to it would be. We have it. We know it occurred. We know the ghostwriter tried to delete it, and then it was recovered from his computer. So we know all of those things. And we've been pretty, you know, I think one of the things American people are frustrated with, right, is how long all of this takes. But I would actually say in congressional times, Chairman Jordan and Chairman Comer have been really good at getting information quickly and in a meaningful way. But I think it's important. I think it's important that people hear it, mostly because I think Democrats in the White House are more worried about the forgetfulness, the well-meaning old man, all of those things, which is a huge political problem for them. But I think it's really important that if you're going to say that they don't meet the willful requirement, I think it's important that the American people hear that Joe Biden did this. And that we know there's an audio of it that exists. So we're going to do everything we can to get it.
Yeah. And how, how does it, I mean, compare and contrast what they're doing to Donald Trump and all these various cases, and especially his documents case where, you know, they've charged him with willfully mishandling, they've charged him with obstruction of justice. Wasn't what the ghostwriter did obstruction when you try to delete audio recordings of him reading, of the President of the United States reading classified information as part of a writing a book?
Well, and I made that point later in the hearing. I said, since 2016, only three people have run for president: Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, Donald Trump. All three of them have been accused of mishandling documents. Hillary Clinton ran a program called Bleach It on her server. Mm-hmm. They destroyed phones with hammers. If that's not obstruction, I don't know what is. But I think if you look at the underlying actual facts of the mishandling of classified documents, that the Biden case is actually the worst of the three, or at least significantly worse than Donald Trump's. And they're obviously not charging him in the same way in which they're charging President Trump. So when you watch the two-tier justice system happen in real time, and you can use it in their own words, I think it's a compelling congressional reason to get it. But it's also politically really, really problematic for the White House.
Yeah. And how frustrating was it in that hearing to have the Democrats just kind of running interference for Joe Biden, suggesting that somehow he was, you know, kind of hadn't done anything wrong and had allegedly cooperated. When people say he cooperated, in 2017, he said, oh, well, here, I just found this classified information in my basement. It seems to me that's the clock ticking for cooperating. That's when he should have turned it over, not when all of a sudden they realize they're investigating Donald Trump for mishandling classified documents, national defense information to be precise, and then turn it over, then cooperate. Like, can you talk a little bit about just the dynamics of that committee and how frustrating it had to be to sit there and listen to all this nonsense from the left?
Well, they clearly didn't want to talk about facts, because the underlying facts in the report are real problematic for the White House and their position, because he did it. They know he did it. They did it over the course of 20, 30 years. They didn't want to talk about the differences in being charged. But I think, you know, my frustrating part with all of this, and from somebody who used to practice in federal court, is this whole like Herculean lift to what becomes willful conduct. Like, my experience with the DOJ is very different. When they want to prosecute, they're pretty good at prosecuting. And to say that you couldn't get to that lift because of all of these things, you know, he was advised by his first counsel. He was advised by his second counsel. He was advised by the National Archives more than once. And then the other answer to, oh, you cooperated, so we're not going to charge you with a crime. Well, that's not the standard. That's the standard for sentencing, not for charging an underlying crime. And apparently the only time that's not the standard is when you're a former president or administration official and you commit a crime, but only if you're one particular official, because it's clear that they're just treating Donald Trump's retention of documents significantly different than they have treated anybody, right? Hillary Clinton, Ronald Reagan, Mike Pence, Joe Biden. And sometimes when you get done with these hearings, you think you're talking to different people. But I don't know who in the middle that the Democrats had any attempt to persuade during that hearing.
Yeah. And the other thing, I guess I went back because, again, this issue has been pretty hot this week and I've had a chance to talk several times, but I went back and I read the Presidential Records Act again. And because there's this, like, I guess, underlying current, especially on the chuckleheads on the left, on places like MSNBC and CNN, that are saying that somehow national defense information is excluded from the Presidential Records Act. And it's actually not. If you read the Presidential Records Act, it essentially says all documents. And there's no exception. There is no carve out for intelligence information, for classified information. And, you know, this is, I guess, to the point of Donald Trump and his team, this is the first time in American history, not only what you said, but also where the decision of whether a document is personal or presidential, the deference has not been given to the former president. It is now, I guess, in the National Archivist's discretion to determine that. And I think that kind of flips at least for the last 40, 50 years of practice under this act on its head. I mean, do you have the same feeling on that?
Well, yeah, and Robert Hur actually rejected that when Biden's personal attorneys were arguing it and trying to compare it to Reagan and his notes and all of these different things. And he actually rejected that argument, which is where I think it was important for a very particular reason. If you read the underlying report, it is clear that Joe Biden did exactly what it met all three of the elements of the crime, with the added one of disclosing it. So then they have to jump through all these hoops, which is where there's a reason the White House's spin machine came out in full force and effect when the report originally came out. Because while you might be able to say you're not going to convince the jury he wasn't anything but a well-meaning, forgetful old man, that's a really problematic sentence to run for re-election on. And they know that. And it's even more problematic because anybody who watches and has two eyes and two ears has been able to see that on their own over the course of the last 18 months. So I don't think they did him any political favors, but I also think it really laid bare the two-tiered justice system and how they have approached it with everybody and then Donald Trump completely differently.
I totally agree. And I also think, Congressman, that there is a underlying current, and you know this because, like you said, you practice in federal court. I've practiced in federal court. I've been both a prosecutor and a defense lawyer. I've tried cases. I've won cases on both sides. I've obviously lost cases on both sides as well. But, you know, I guess this highlighted for me prosecutorial discretion more than any other case, and just how we're so afraid now of having the jurors, the American people, decide these types of cases that prosecutors are kind of standing and have this standard that, you know, if we can't convince ourselves that we can prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt, then we're not even going to bring the case. And I don't think that's what our founding fathers intended when they created the jury system. And I think the other piece that is equally concerning is that he didn't say what I think is the quiet part out loud, which is I would have to bring this case most likely in Washington, D.C., and that jury would never convict Joe Biden because he's a Democrat and they voted 92% for him. Any thoughts on that?
At the same time, they're trying to escalate the case in D.C. against Donald Trump and trying to say that somehow the right to a speedy trial isn't the defendant's and it's like society as a whole, and trying to get that case. That's the case they want to bring first prior to the election for the exact same reasons.
Right.
And I think there's another part to this that we should talk about, and that's that when you deal with the DOJ, and as we've been going through these investigations, I mean, we know somebody from the presidential transition team interfered with the FBI's ability to try and interview Hunter Biden. We know somebody at DOJ interfered with IRS's whistleblowers trying to continue down that investigation as well. So we're not taking any of these things in a vacuum. We know those things are true. We know they're true. And it's clear that as you do that, and then you read this underlying report and then really read the recommendation, that there is obviously politics afoot. And I mean, in dealing with these things, and we really have to get to the bottom of it, because if Lady Justice is not blind, I mean, it sounds, hokey, but it's really, really true. And I just don't think people believe it right now. And it's because that the DOJ has engaged in these things this way.
Yeah. There's no way to not look at this and say objectively, this is partisan, that they're making political decisions, whether it's, you know, their favorite term, inherent bias, or whether it's overtly political. I mean, they're making decisions differently if it's Donald Trump versus anybody else.
Well, and who it hurts is the U.S. attorneys out in North Dakota. It hurts the FBI agents out here who are trying to stop fentanyl poisoning, who are trying to stop mass, who are dealing with tribal issues in rural America that are just really good law enforcement agents trying to do their job. And they get caught up in all of this stuff that is going on in Maine justice. And it's really not fair to them as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that around the country when people are just like, this is making it really hard, because now every defendant thinks that we're politically targeting them because they see that we're doing that in Donald Trump's case. Let's take a 30,000 foot view. You know, you're currently a member of Congress. It's a very close Congress. Republicans have the majority, but, you know, by the end of, I guess, next week or even sooner, you're going to have like a 2-vote majority. How hard is it right now to get anything done and to actually move the ball?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's real hard, and we can't pass a rule, which is a technical version, but it's how you wield the control of the majority. So somebody asked me that the other day, and I said, well, our last rule vote failed by 18 votes. So I don't know if a two-vote majority or a three-vote majority really matters all that much as we continue down that process. But, you know, once we get through the government funding mess that we're going to have again next week, we're going to be there. We're going to be there for the tough stuff. We have to do those things. I think Mike Johnson got put in a really bad position. He's a really great person. I actually got his seat on Judiciary. I've served with Mike for my entire 5 years in Congress in one form or another. And I think he's doing the best job he can. But yeah, it's razor thin. It's razor thin in the Senate as well, right? They've got a one-vote majority. And I think it's just really difficult to move things. And that's even before you go into full campaign season.
Yeah, speaking of full campaign season, you've decided to run for the governor of North Dakota. Your great governor, Doug Burgum, I guess, has decided that he's had enough of whatever that is, and he's decided not to run. And so you've thrown your hat in the ring, running a great campaign. But like, talk to me a little bit about kind of your ideas as to what you're going to do for the great people of North Dakota.
Well, I think one thing, and this is, you're a lawyer, I'm a lawyer, so we can get into the weeds a little bit on this, but I think the Supreme Court's going to strike down the Chevron doctrine, which is agency deference. And the two biggest industries in North Dakota are ag and energy. And our biggest fight out here isn't floods or blizzards or tornadoes or drought or hailstorm. Our biggest fight is EPA, Interior, the federal regulatory regime that makes it a little more expensive to produce a bushel of wheat or a little more expensive to produce an MCF of gas or transport it to market. And so I think we have a unique opportunity. Our great attorney general, Drew Wrigley, out here.
Close friend
of mine. I think once that happens, we're going to have a really unique opportunity to put as much pressure on the federal government as possible in order to let North Dakotans do what they do the best, and that's feed and fuel the world. So I think by 6 years in the state legislature, give us an opportunity to do those things, and that's what we're hearing on the street. That and border. The border issue, we can't be farther away from the southern border than North Dakota, but we have fentanyl poisoning in every community across the state and really actively engaged in trying to figure out how we can use state responses. You know, we've had the National Guard down to the southern border a couple times. They're always willing to serve when it's necessary. And people are really frustrated that the only time the federal government gets engaged in the border is when they sue Texas for trying to enforce the border.
Yeah, and this is the thing, is every state is a border state. You're dealing with the consequences of terrible policy from Joe Biden and his Department of Homeland Security primarily, but certainly Department of Justice as well, that are all making terrible decisions that are not helping not only the citizens that live on the southern border or around the southern border in those states, but also places like North Dakota, my home state of Iowa, and elsewhere. So you're right. And the fentanyl issue, let's focus on that a little bit. You know, as I went to China, I tried to, work with the Chinese and their law enforcement, especially, but they're also their State Department, and try to figure out a way that they would at least schedule fentanyl and fentanyl, kind of the chemical equivalents of that. They also promised President Trump they would do that when he met with President Xi. We got some relief on that front, but now all the precursor chemicals are going to the super labs in Mexico, and as well as methamphetamine precursors, which is not unique or not a new problem for places like Iowa and North Dakota. Meth has always been, and it's probably what I spent a lot of time as a U.S. attorney fighting and combating, in those same cartels and organized crime gangs that were trafficking in that. And like, we have to do something about this Chinese pipeline to Mexico, and then Mexico across the southern border. Any thoughts or ideas on that, either as a member of Congress now or ultimately as governor of your beloved state?
Well, one, I think if more people treated immigration and detention holds like we do in North Dakota, we'd be better off.
Yeah.
This catch and release stuff that goes on. I spent 10 years in federal court doing public defender work. That doesn't happen up here. And then two, I think the one thing that we have to focus on in this argument, when you get into these fights about the fentanyl production and all of that, it's ports of entry, between ports of entry, U.S. citizens, non-U.S. citizens, and none of that's the real issue. 100% of it is made by the cartels in Mexico. 100% of it. And they're being, and the feedstock of the vast majority of it is coming from China. So in order for somebody to die of an overdose or fentanyl poisoning in North Dakota, the cartel is touching that. We know that. I don't care. The rest of it doesn't matter. So giving our Border Patrol agents operational control of the southern border is hugely impactful. And getting resources back to the northern border, by the way, where we're also, criminals are like water. They will find the path of least resistance. Right. We are seeing a huge uptick up here as well. And we're diverting resources down to the southern border because it's necessary. And so I think absolutely maximum trade pressure, all of the different things we can do on China to stop the flow of those precursors, and then give our brave men and women on the southern border that have badges and guns operational control of the border again. Because it matters in towns like Grand Forks or Bismarck, North Dakota, because we have a kid die every day on it.
Yeah. No, and it's tragic, and that's unnecessary. We have to do something. You know, it's just the amount of our fellow citizens that are being poisoned to death, some without even knowing that what they're taking is laced with fentanyl. I think it's just, it's a moral fight that we, you know, you and I have been engaged in, but we need to get everybody on both sides of the aisles, because this is just, it's not working. And so we gotta do everything we can to change the game. Well, so Congressman, that's about all the time we have. How can people learn more about you, what you're doing in North Dakota? And, you know, I'm sure a lot of my listeners are going to want to support your efforts. So where's the best place to find it?
ArmstrongNE.com. Armstrong is way back in the day. Somebody bought all my names and they forgot that one. So it's the same one we had for Congress. It fits perfectly. You know, I always tell people I do the job of 38 Texans in D.C. because I'm the only member from North Dakota. And if you're interested in what we're doing, we'd love to have your help. We'd love to have your support. Thanks for having me on.
ArmstrongND.com. I can't wait to celebrate all your success, and wishing you all the best of luck, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And remember, everything I'm doing is on Whitaker.tv. And thanks for joining us for another episode of Liberty and Justice, presented by American Cornerstone Institute.
Liberty and Justice.